going out of my head.
Yes, I think I'm going out of my head with the letter man.
I guess I picked good ones, didn't I?
The Letterman. Oh, that was like my introduction to harmony. When I was a kid, my mom and dad just, well, they loved to, they were singers.
Harmonize with each other.
Anything. Well, there was a lot of harmony there, yes. but Letterman records were all over our household.
I can't say I'm the most familiar with their music, but I do know this song.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a classic. As far as I'm concerned, it's one of the great love songs.
And the tie-in, of course, is that we're talking the year 1968, and this was a hit song from the year 1968. And in studio with me to talk about that year, for the whole hour so far, Riley County Historical Museum Director Cheryl Collins, as well as Curator of Collections Alana Parker, and we've been talking about a whole slew of different topics related to the year 1968. And, well, one we haven't really talked about that Dave mentioned to me also was that that was also the year Robert Kennedy visited K-State.
That's right. Of course, with the university here, we've had a lot of very important people and interesting people visit over the years, and both Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy visited during that year.
Do you remember kind of the air around his visit as well? We talked a little bit about Martin Luther King's visit. Do you remember how people seemed to respond to Robert Kennedy? Was it similar to maybe their thoughts on Dr. King?
My understanding is that he was received well. I wasn't on campus in that period, so I don't know personally, but that is my impression from reading things. A lot going on campus. The Regents approved building the natatorium that year, so then they could move out of the pool in the basement of Nichols Hall. They still required freshmen to take a swimming test in 1968. I think 1970 was the last year that they required all freshmen to take a swimming test, so that continued for a little while.
That's kind of a relic, isn't it? Because I never had to take it at my colleges, but I have a friend who went to Washington and Lee in Virginia. It's kind of old school in the way they operate. And they had a swimming test there just a few years ago. So maybe that's a relic of an older time.
I think maybe it is.
Did you take a swimming test when...
I got here in 1971, and I did not have to, but my husband, who went to K-State, started at K-State in 1970, he did have to take one. So that's why I think 1970 is the last year.
Okay. And Alana, did you go to K-State?
I did.
Did you take a swimming test?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Because you passed a swimming test.
You know, and I, the pool was not open by the time you got to K-State, I'm pretty sure. Right. It was open for a while, you know, and then, of course, when the natatorium opened, they discontinued the pool in the basement of Nichols Hall.
Okay.
But swimming was different back in those days because a lot of us went swimming in lakes, you know.
Oh, yes. At a Tuttle Puddle.
And creeks, Tuttle Puddle. it wasn't just about swimming in pools, but, I mean, that was a lot more, well, less safe, I suppose, in those environments.
Yes.
Less supervised.
Yes. And, of course, that's why in Manhattan, parents hand-dug the first public pool in City Park, is because kids were going down to the Kansas River and drowning every year. We had a private pool on 4th Street a little before the public pool in City Park, but of course you had to pay to go into that. So, yeah, that was specifically...
Well, you still have to pay to go into them now.
Well, yeah. You didn't in those days. But then it was also a hand-dug pool, so I don't think it was quite as nice as what we have with the lazy river and the diving boards. And
I'd imagine not.
All of the amenities that we have with a pool now.
And I can attest, maybe not personally, to that lack of supervision. Even in California, it was a thing. My uncle used to rock dive because they lived at a lake. I mentioned it briefly about them living at a lake. He used to rock dive, and I can't imagine... It's a smart idea. It's not a good idea.
No, I don't think so either.
It was a different time, the year 1968. And that leads me into a very important question that's important to every teenager's mind, a car.
Yes. Of course, we're a car culture in 1968. That would be absolutely a big part of kids' growing up. I'm certain they dragged Points Avenue here. I grew up in Wichita, and in Wichita it's Dragging Douglas, but all small town kids or big city kids would take their car and drag, you know, just make the scene with visiting their friends. And so I'm assuming that Manhattan kids did that as well.
I hear Casement was the place to be back in the day.
Well,
whoa.
And of course, going to Vista would definitely have been part of the teenage years in Manhattan, Kansas, I'm absolutely sure.
And 68 would have been kind of like toward the beginning of the muscle car era.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about Camaros and Cudas and all kinds of different things that
Corvettes.
Were out there. Of course, Corvettes have been around for 10 years before that, more than 10 years before that. But the muscle car things, you know, those were really starting to become a big thing back then. GTOs?
Yes.
What were some of the first cars you guys had in the 60s, or maybe if it was the 70s, which ones did you guys end up
having? Don't look at me. I didn't have a car in the 60s if it wasn't 1/64 scale.
Okay.
Right. Me either. But in the 70s, I had my parents had a Valiant with the push button.
Radio?
Well, it was a push button to get into gear.
Oh, yeah.
This Valiant, I thought it was wonderful.
I think they've gone back to that a little bit, too, with some of the buttons and levers and dials that you can use to shift gears.
Well, it's a little bit different technology now, Nick.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still drive.
But we had back then, you know, a lot of the vehicles were stick shifts, not automatic transmission. Now they're called millennial theft devices.
Oh, you can't hold me off. I drive a stick.
No. Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. Good for you.
I mean, I rode a motorcycle before I ever drove a car, so I mean.
But, you know, the thing with me with back in those days with cars, I was assembling the models.
Yes.
And that was one of the things that, you know, I love cars, and I would put together, you know, the Richard Petty model and different things like that. And that's something you don't see much anymore. I know Hobby Lobby's got some models, but that's about it. That was a big thing for young kids then.
Yes, a big entertainment. There was a hobby shop in Aggieville that had all sorts of model cars, planes, and those sorts of things that kids could put together.
Hmm.
And adults would do that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Talking in here with Riley County Historical Museum Director Cheryl Collins, as well as Curator of Collections Alana Park. We're talking about the year 1968, various happenings and occurrences and openings throughout the years.
When was the last time a train went through the depot?
The last passenger train was 1971.
Okay.
The last train, of course, we still have trains go by there, but they aren't connected with the depot anymore. I'd have to look that up. I bet my suspicion
in
the 1980s, because that's when, you know, the Rock Island went out, and that's when they
I remember getting on a train. It was like the steam locomotive on the way to Topeka for railroad days. And they had little stops that you could make. And this is like 86. You got on in Manhattan and got off in Topeka.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun.
So it was still connected at that point.
Yeah. Just got a couple of minutes. Let's talk about the
UFM.
The UFM aspect to what we've been. This has been just a lot of fun.
Yes, and the big party, November 3rd. I think folks are going to have fun partying like it's 1968 again.
Yes, and wanted to mention a little bit, since this is focused on celebrating UFM's 50th anniversary, if you don't mind if I mention just a little bit about UFM, if somebody's not familiar with what they do, it's a nonprofit campus community education program serving Kansas State University, Manhattan area, and communities across Kansas. So as I mentioned, started in 1968 by a group of KSU students and faculty as a way to bridge communications between the campus community and the Manhattan community. So they still do that today, except now they do offer some of the courses you can get college credit for. And as I mentioned, classes that they offered back in 68, 69, 70, for example, the macrame that they're still offering today. So it was a lot of fun. And the original name of the organization was the University for Man, but in the early 1990s, it was changed to the University for Mankind. So that's what this exhibit was so much fun to work on, and we were so thankful to be invited to participate in commemorating this anniversary. So that exhibit, again, is at the KSU Student Union, Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and then they are going to be open on Saturdays, too, for a period of time as well.
And the big party's November 3rd, so you can party like 1968 with Dave.
Yeah, I was 7, and I tell you what, I had great parties with birthday cakes.
My suspicion is there will be some good food there, too.
There'll be some good food and some good music. It should be a lot of fun.
And a reminder, that celebration, November 3rd, 7:30 at the Flint Hills Discovery Center. Thanks again for coming in, guys. And that's it for us today. That's the end. If you missed any of this episode, you can check it out, newsradiokman.com. Go down to the on-demand section and look for In Focus. Thanks. See you next time.
City folks tomorrow here on News Radio KMAN. It's 10 a.m. Good morning.
Come in and see your neighbors at Carpet One of Manhattan on Fort Riley Boulevard. They've got you covered. KMAN, Manhattan. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by TheraWorks Relief.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. President Trump wants to find out